This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Today, we're going to be talking about federal hiring, some important issues that are going on right now, what's been the impact on hiring reform, what's going on with this continuing resolution. There's probably been a lot of pushback. People are starting to get concerned. The government's not hiring like they used to be, that we don't have a full budget. What's happening with that? What's the role of OPM? There's some things going on with that about discussing the role of OPM. What should they be doing? And then where should they be going towards the future? I've got in the studio with me, I've got the co-CEO, Linda Ricks of AVIEW Central, AVIEW Technology Incorporated, but they run AVIEWCentral.com, which is a federal job site. You know about USA Jobs, but you also should know about AVIEWCentral.com because it's a place that agencies contract with in order to post their jobs and do hiring off of as well. They got some social networking tools. We'll talk about that later on in the show, Linda, but welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, thanks for coming. Let's talk about this continuing resolution. Mm-hmm. I mean, I am really starting to see some of the impact. I've talked to some recruiters, and they are saying that, hey, listen, you know, we're cutting back. You know, things are tight. We are still hiring one or two people, but things are getting really, really tight right now since we don't have this budget. You deal with a lot of different agencies in terms of, you know, them posting jobs, them putting things out. What are you hearing?
Well, it's the big unknown, right?
Okay.
You know, when are we going to get a budget? Are we ever going to get a budget? Are we going to get a budget this year? The CR process, I think, is a process that most federal agencies are quite used to because we've had them going for some time.
Right.
I think this CR process is different because every extension usually requires some form of cutback, and that's where people have a lot of uncertainty about where those cuts will be made. With the federal pay freeze, that probably will allow for, you know, some accommodation of some of the cuts, but certainly not a great deal. I don't know what the numbers are exactly, but I think it's probably a drop in the bucket compared to what we're looking for. But I do think that the agencies there are some agencies that are under a hiring freeze on top of the pay freeze. Generally, on a replenishment cycle, so if you want to think about it this way, for the government to replenish the workforce from normal attrition, normal retirements, normal resignations, it's about 220,000 to 250,000 new hires a year.
Okay.
So that's without looking at the internal moves or, you know, any promotions or reassignments or transfers from one agency to another. So it still is a lot of jobs. The problem is we're not really good at anticipating what they're going to be, and agencies tend to hold in reserve until at least fourth quarter.
Okay.
So I would expect that probably if we looked fourth quarter, we're probably going to see kind of a frenzy of activity to get people on board in preparation for the next budget cycle.
So we're thinking about, when you're talking about fourth quarter, we're talking about maybe kind of going into maybe, what, July, August, September, around that area, kind of in terms
right.
of a budget cycle?
Correct.
Okay.
So July, August, September, and then if there is a 2012 budget, then first quarter will of 2012, so that's October, November, December,
right.
will be potentially pretty high,
okay.
assuming that programs, you know, that are currently being funded continue to be funded. Now, it's going to be hot in some areas, and it's going to be over and out in other areas, depending on how the cuts are made. And I assume that there will be, because that's pretty much all anybody's focused on right now. So I would look at the opportunities are still there. Agencies are still posting jobs. The process will be in third quarter, especially if
now,
they are.
Now, are they posting jobs just for kind of the job seeker or kind of the federal, you know, employer? Are they posting jobs and just kind of holding? Like, you know, they're kind of like almost like grabbing the resumes and just kind of holding tight to say, listen, we're going to see where our funding goes before we call people?
Yeah, that's kind of contrary to government HR nature.
Okay.
Usually, if you're going to post a job and you're going to go through the process of posting, you want a job that is funded and authorized. There are some cases, and we've seen this in the past, I would be wary about it if I were a current federal employee or an applicant for federal employment. There are some cases where you may get an offer and it may be rescinded. So you need to be extremely careful about.
I've known some people that happened to them.
Yes.
I mean, but they got an offer from an agency, then all of a sudden they heard about, you know, all of a sudden they came back to them and said, we don't have the money to pay you.
Right.
We
got
to rescind. It's not you, but we just can't bring you in right now.
Right. Yeah. And a couple of times I've seen that happen, being, you know, one of the more seasoned, shall we say, veterans of federal employment. Some of the times I've seen that happen, people have picked up and moved and relocated for a position, only to get there and then have a freeze imposed.
Hmm.
So you do need to be extremely careful on how you negotiate that. And also, if you are going to geographically relocate, go by yourself. Don't bring your family.
Don't move until you're there. So until you get a final offer, until you're at your desk in that agency,
correct.
You need to, I mean, you know, for a person who's maybe thinking about resigning from their position, I mean, given this time period that we're in right now, because it's, you know, very uneasy times, you know, are you suggesting that maybe a person should not, you know, even give a full resignation? Because I've had people who have resigned from a position thinking they had a new offer on the table,
correct,
had went to the new place, and then all of a sudden said, listen, we can't do this. Do they have any, you know, can you fight that? Is there any kind of legal ramifications to that? I mean, what can a person do?
There can be legal ramifications for it. I have seen people fight it via either a union grievance or, you know, some type of suit or class action suit even, and be successful getting some form of compensation, or be successful in the future getting another position, but not necessarily actually being able to correct the situation they're in.
Right.
So that takes a long time, and it can be very complicated.
Very costly.
Mm-hmm, and costly.
Right.
So my advice to people is read your offer letter extremely carefully. And almost always what you're going to find is there will be something there that says that we can rescind this offer at any time at the government's discretion. And if that is the case, then don't do anything really rash until you are
sure
that you are on board in the new position. So that's one thing I would be careful about.
Okay.
That said, I think you ought to keep applying. One of the things that we try to encourage our customers to do, so these are on the employer side, is keep recruiting. Keep getting
because if they
out
stop,
there.
Then it's going to be it's
if
gonna
they
be
stop,
tougher.
It's going to be really bad.
Sure.
Yeah. And especially for this reason, if we're under CR and we continue under CR, let's say a couple more rounds go through or whatever.
You think we'll go all the way to September? I mean, just from you, I know you kind of monitor what's going on in Congress. You think that they'll run it out and do a long-term CR?
I think it's probable.
Okay.
I don't know that. I don't have any special insight. Let me put it that way.
Sure.
I'm not. You know, I'm just reading the tea leaves like everybody else does. But I think that the idea of getting concession on this at the same time that you're looking at a 2012 budget, it might just be easier to CR this year and start working on the 2012 budget. Hmm. So it's really hard to say.
Would that have an impact on just, I mean, would that kind of completely just flatline hiring?
No.
Okay.
I think agencies that are smart are going to say, okay, we've been under CR for 6 months. Or 7 months, whatever it ends up being. Now, how much of a budget lapse rate have we built by not filling positions or by holding the line on filling just a handful of positions?
Right. Right.
So if they look at their budget lapse rate, then when they come to fourth quarter, and this is why it's important for employers, and it's not that they're doing this to somehow put a smoke screen up for applicants or anything else. It's really important that they continue to recruit. Because what they're trying to do, and these are not bogus jobs they're recruiting for. They're recruiting for real jobs. But they may get a window, and I have seen the government do this repeatedly, of 2 weeks or a month. if you're going to do any hiring, you got to get those people on board now.
Right.
So by continuing the recruitment process, they're ready. When there's a window of opportunity, they can make those offers, get the people on board before the next, you know, probable closing of that window occurs. So I think it's important for applicants to continue to be interested, to keep applying, even though I know it can be very discouraging.
Right.
But they need to keep doing that. And then, you know, back to I know the situation you're really involved in with the BRAC and trying to get people placed.
Right.
That are current federal employees that are going to lose their job due to BRAC. That's an area where they just need to be super aggressive right now, because it is.
And that's the networking they need to, since they're already government, they need to get out there on a whole different page in terms of networking, meeting people. Because like you said, the jobs are out there. If you meet the right selecting official, that person could possibly open some doors for
right,
you.
Right, okay. Right. And I also want to encourage those folks, even though it sounds, I know that when you're inside the government, this always sounds like it has risk to it, but look at the federal contractors for employment opportunities, because getting out to the contractor community, I think, is really important, because agencies that do not have the ability to hire may have program funds, and if they do, they will contract for those services. Because even though, and the weird part about this is, the money is oftentimes slated differently, or what I think at DOD they call the color of money, mm-hmm. right? So money for a program is not the same thing as money for salaries or certain operating expenses. So money from programs can sometimes be used to support federal salaries, or they may be used just for program money, in which case, being with a contractor means you have a much better shot at getting a job and at least keeping your hands in the public service through that route.
Have Linda Ricks in the studio. She's the co-CEO of Aview Technologies. They run AviewCentral.com. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
David Gaddis, Chief of Global Enforcement Operations from the Drug Enforcement Administration, commented during the panel discussion, Global Illicit Supply Chains Protecting Citizens and International Borders.
The organized crime network of transnational drug trafficking is one of the most challenging aspects of investigating these organizations. They're very lateral, they're very flexible. It's almost a cat and mouse type of dynamic.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Criminal organizations develop and utilize increasingly sophisticated supply chains to move contraband across global networks. To help combat the global problem of illicit supply chains, Booz Allen Hamilton strategy and technology consultants are working closely with U.S. intelligence, law enforcement, and other agencies charged with slowing or preventing illegal trafficking, leveraging holistic and comprehensive supply chain attack strategies to help curb the flow of illegal guns, drugs, finances, cybercrime, and people. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Chad Fulgham is the FBI's chief information officer. He says the Bureau is putting in place new tools to make agents more mobile.
Our agents needed to be in the field. That's where they belong. That's where they do the work. And we have to figure out how we can reduce the admin burden on them and how we can unchain them from their desk and empower them. Some of the things that we have done in this area, we talked a little earlier about our next-gen workspace, providing that not just the latest Office, but instant messaging and VoIP and VTC and desktop sharing and web collaboration. happen.
CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation, you can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
For 11 years, government leaders have gathered to explore the latest mandates and best practices at the Government Performance Summit. Today, with a major revision to the Government Performance and Results Act, there is an unparalleled opportunity to integrate analytics into better decision-making for the entire nation. Join hosts the Performance Institute, FMA, AGA, and Gov events April 4th through the 6th for the 11th Annual Government Performance Summit. Space is limited, so register today at governmentperformance.org.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Have with me Linda Ricks. She's the co-CEO of AVIEW Technologies Incorporated, and they run AVIEWCentral.com, which is a federal job site that you need to be on to take a look at what's going on. You know, Linda, before in the previous segment, we were talking about, that federal people should be again looking at contractors. I mean, open your options up if you need to, you know, look at some other opportunities given this, and that, you know, there's still positions in the federal government.
Right.
But what you're saying is that we're probably not going to see the same number. You know, do you think that as with, and, you know, with the new Congress, everybody's on this kind of budget side, you know, and rightfully so. I mean, everybody's saying, hey, listen, we got to save money. Mm-hmm. We've got to cut back on some agency spending. Do you see a kind of a rift happening, possibly a reduction in force possibly happening across the federal government? I mean, is that something that as we see how this Congress is playing out, that they may go into that mode?
My guess on that is that would be very rare.
Okay.
On a government-wide basis, I think you'll see then that in selected programs,
okay,
just like you do with BRAC.
Okay.
You know, you have a specific program that has lost funding, or where you will see a lot of times a hiring freeze put in places. We've got 100 employees in this program. It's going to lose funding. We've got to place them somewhere in the agency. Their first option. Before an agency rifts, the first option always is, what vacancies do we have? Freeze those, because we may need to place our current onboard employees into those positions if we can. Or if we have to run reduction force procedures, then we don't know how that's going to shake out. So let's keep this reserve being built just in case that happens. But I think you're going to see it more program or mission specific kinds of cuts than you will see across the board. You may see across the board early out retirements.
You think so?
That would be...
But that would be good, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
I guess it depends on who you are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends. Hopefully we won't lose too much of talent or too much of your knowledge talent.
It basically, yeah, what you're going to have is the folks who are reasonably close to retirement may take that option. And it's always the opportunity of first resort in a situation like this, because there are two elements to that. One is the idea of reducing the workforce by a voluntary method is always preferred versus an involuntary method like RIF. And the second is you have an opportunity to potentially make some people rather happy with that shot who want to go and do something else.
Right.
But they also happen to be generally your highest compensated because they've been there so long, and so they've gotten to the top of this step in their grade, or they've gotten to the highest grade in their career ladder. And most people endeavor to do that to get their high three anyway.
Mm-hmm. I've heard about that in the IT sector, that there are, you know, some... Not a push out, but, you know, to bring in some of the newer talent,
right,
on IT, whether it be cyber or certain things, kind of, you know, early retirements of some people.
So you can look at it at another way, which is, you know, potentially, if you just look at it just from a dollars standpoint, for every retiree that leaves, you maybe get two entry-level workers. So with the government needs, let's take IT as a good example, government needs a lot of cybersecurity people. Best talent for that's probably emerging as opposed to having existed
coming
for
out
long.
Of universities, MIT or wherever the case is, right?
Right. And so we're still seeing, I think I saw the other day a news article on Customs and Border Protection is looking for the private sector to loan them cybersecurity experts. So they're obviously having some kind of contention around filling these jobs. So I would say, you know, your first bet is probably you're going to see early out retirements or voluntary separations like that, where there's also usually a cash, a lump sum amount of money in addition to your annuity that you're going to be getting. And then that will open up folks from the entry level or from outside of government to be able to come in at that point if we replenish those. And we may not replenish the exact position. We may instead just say, okay, either we're going to absorb that as part of our cuts, or that gives us this much room to hire two or three people in at an entry grade level. Okay. So
with what we're seeing, and maybe to me, I'm thinking this is becoming more and more competitive environment.
Right.
With federal hiring, there's only so many federal jobs out there. Are you still seeing the same kind of dynamics in terms of 200, 300, 500 people applying for federal positions? And if so, how does a person make themselves stand out in this? I know we talked about mm-hmm. this before, but how do you make yourself stand out when everyone's using the keyword strategy and everything else?
Right. I think it's really extraordinarily difficult as an individual to stand out of a field or a pack that big on your own, on your paper.
Sure.
Let's put it this way, on your paper. And so you're going to have to start looking at alternative ways to make connections. I am, a big advocate of using social media because most of the government's top officials are on various social media, and it is a inexpensive, free way for you to create your own brand on the internet and to attract people to you. So your marketing opportunities are greater to be able to do that, and it is, we've talked about this before on the who you know issue of whether that really gets you in, but it certainly can get you better information on opportunities that would fit your interest and make it possible for you to know about things that you're never going to see on a big board. I mean, and you won't see it not because it's hidden, but because you just, the search engines don't work that well, and it's tens of thousands of jobs on any given day. So, how fast can you get to a position you're really interested in?
And, we were just talking about this, that a lot of companies are not listing jobs on the big boards as they used to. I mean, there's a shift, it seems, and people still use, job search engines. That's not going away, but people are also using these social media tools to start, putting out jobs. I see stuff on Twitter. I see stuff on Facebook. I see stuff on LinkedIn.
Yep.
I see stuff everywhere.
Yeah. And I think I was referencing an article that I read in the Detroit Free Press on the use of social media by private companies. And private recruiters are pretty much going to LinkedIn. And I think the government is woefully inadequate in their presence on LinkedIn, especially using it specifically for the purpose of recruiting on this scale. So I think that if you are looking, but a lot of hiring managers are on LinkedIn. So a lot of federal hiring managers.
Okay.
So it's really important to
have a presence. Are these federal? Because you deal with a lot of federal hiring managers. Are they on LinkedIn and they're looking at other people's profiles on LinkedIn? Are they using this as a networking?
I think they're doing both. I think they're looking for people and they're looking for jobs.
Right. It's their own career success management as well as kind of looking at other people for their field spot. Maybe. Why LinkedIn? Is it because and I know you guys developed some social networking tools on avucentral.com. Why is it headed in this direction? Like, why LinkedIn and why kind of the social media? What's making that the power driver of hiring now?
I think it's because it's, first of all, it's free.
Okay.
So there's no cost to participating. And secondly, they're a very professional site. So very different from a lot of big boards where you're posting your resume and that's all you're doing. These are sites where it is specifically for the purpose of, if you will, professional development. And so you're getting a lot better quality information. It's not crowded with a lot of noise. And one thing I do know is that is where federal contractors go.
Okay.
So if you are looking for a position with a federal contractor, I'd get on LinkedIn because they're very active there.
Are you going to be putting something like that in place with AVIEW? I mean, are you looking at I know you guys use some Google tools and some other things.
Right.
You've been very, very innovative with that. I mean, where are you looking at towards the future?
I think we're looking at definitely creating communities of interest. And however that's done, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn, we're actually working on some new strategies in addition to the social networking that we have on the site already. What we're trying to do on the site right now with AVIEW Central is we're trying to make sure that our customers and their recruiters can dialogue directly with potential candidates. It's really important for that to happen because a candidate, when they're looking at thousands of job opportunities and trying to discern what's really good, often has really specific questions about how an agency hires, or it could be their method or their process, but it also could be, what are you interested in? And I have this. How does that translate to your world? So I think it's great to connect in that way. So we have forums and opportunities for people to talk to each other.
Okay.
One of the best sources of information for applicants on how to get a job are other applicants.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times we'll get a candidate that will go on a forum and say, you know, I'm just so frustrated, I can't get a job, you know, come on.
Right.
And then they'll get a job and they'll get hired. And invariably, they'll send an email to our help desk or something. They'll say, you know, thanks for your help and I got a job. Yeah. And then we'll email them right away and we'll say, get your story on these forums.
The thing, right, to let people
so
know.
Other people know how you did this and can, you know,
use it as one as a hope.
Yeah, exactly.
But offer some strategies, right. So somebody made it, I can make it too.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
So we're always trying to get them to tell their story because it's just powerful. I mean, it all comes down to the individual at the end of the day. So
we're talking to Linda Rick. She's a co-CEO of AVIEW Technologies. They run AVIEWCentral.com, which is a federal job site. We're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's not always easy to know when a person is agitated or excited. Sometimes you may not even know when you are. So a new wearable device has been engineered to detect stress, bad or good. The sensor looks like a wristwatch but records movement, temperature, and small changes in electric currents on your skin triggered by emotion. Rosalind Picard of MIT's Media Lab is the lead inventor.
It changes with things that are changing in your brain, and you wouldn't think that information would show up on your wrist, but some of it does.
The device can help you and others understand what stresses and relaxes you. For example, people may have doubts when you say walking back and forth helps calm you down.
But when they see the signal plummet when you pace, they say, wow, that pacing looks like it's helping you. I'm not going to tell you to stop pacing anymore.
Currently, the sensor is mainly used for various research projects, but it could be available to the general public in a year. To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
The Pentagon is stopping work on a new engine for the Air Force F-35 fighter jet. This engine was designed to be a backup. The reason for the stoppage is money. It's expected to last for 90 days. There was no money included in President Obama's budget proposal for the next fiscal year, but budget deliberations do continue. Congress is split on the project. Some like it, some don't. GE and Rolls-Royce are the contractors. I'm J.J. Green.
When you fly over the North Pole, do you ever think about how remote you are? Airink does, and that's why they have it covered. They're the only company in the world that provides high-frequency data links so that pilots can always communicate with someone on the ground. Airink ensures you're never alone at 35,000 feet. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
For America's wounded warriors, sometimes coming home can be a battle in itself. Every one of them needs our support to meet the challenges they face every day. The USO provides Americans a way to offer that support to our wounded warriors and their families. Join us. Visit USO.org to learn how you can make a difference in their lives. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
I'm Dr. Linda Van Eldick, a biomedical scientist supported by the American Health Assistance Foundation. I conduct research aimed at discovering new and effective treatments for Alzheimer's disease. This is critical because more than 1,000 Americans develop Alzheimer's every day. At our website, you can learn how to live with or care for someone with the disease. Call 1-800-437-2423 or go to ahaf.org for a free brochure on understanding Alzheimer's disease.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday mornings at 10, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. A new genetic disease has been identified. It's rare, debilitating, and is the result of an error in one gene.
So the gene was defective, and the gene product was not being made, or it was being made improperly. Therefore, it wasn't functioning appropriately.
Dr. William Gall is with the National Human Genome Research Institute. He says that gene product is a protein called CD73.
So if you have a defect in that gene, you're not producing the CD73 protein, and therefore, there's calcification that occurs.
Painful calcification occurs in blood vessels below the waist and in joints of the hands and feet. For details, visit www.genome.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We got in the studio Linda Rick. She's been giving some good advice to federal job seekers, whether you're in the federal government or you're just trying to get in or trying to, you know, break into that market. Some good advice. She's the co-CEO of AVU Technologies. They run AVUCentral.com, which is a federal job site. Linda, the Huffington Post, this article, and let me get the title of the article, because the title of the article was saying a conflict of interest and shakedowns at OPM. We'll get into part of this, but you know, in overall context, you know, what this article stemmed from? What I mean, what were you thinking about when you put this article out and you wrote it? What was on your mind?
Well, I think it actually stemmed from watching a lot of media and congressional interest in things like federal pay, for example, and other areas where we were looking at what has happened to OPM over the years. Now, OPM was created by President Carter. And over the years, what has happened is...
And the reason for creation was what? Just to have oversight over... Because by that time, that's what we're talking about, what, the 70s, 80s type?
It was 1978.
Right.
The purpose of creating it was, at that time, there was a board called the Commissioners that headed the United States Civil Service Commission.
Right.
And the Civil Service Commission was all the federal employees. Mm-hmm. And the board was tenured. Okay, so they, once you became a commissioner, it was a lifetime appointment. It's like Supreme Court. And so what they wanted to be able to do was modernize and reform the personnel system of the federal government. So it didn't look like, you know, it had come from 1776, right?
Sure.
So,
because there was a lot of nepotism at that time.
A lot of nepotism, and there lacked structural elements, like performance was not addressed very effectively. The merit system did not exist at that time. It existed in a certain form, but not overtly stated, if you will. So when OPM was created, it spun out of the agency certain functions, and one was the appeals function, which became the Merit System Protection Board. So basically it said it's a conflict of interest for OPM to adjudicate the merits of its own decisions about the workforce. The second thing it spun out, interestingly, was hiring. All hiring was centralized in the Civil Service Commission. So no agency did their own hiring.
Huh. Okay.
And at that time, it then, what we call delegated examining or delegated examining units.
And that's where that title comes
from. Yes, okay. DEU came from this whole notion of we should delegate this to agencies because they are closest to their mission and they know how to hire for their needs. And that became part of that. There was a short-term pay-for-performance thing called merit pay that affected senior managers that was abolished fairly quickly, as we have seen time and time again in government. So OPM was created to set policy and to set a policy framework and to get out of the business of hiring.
Okay.
And it was designed specifically to delegate that and then to regulate it because it can't regulate its own hiring.
Okay.
And in that case, you know, what you're seeing is that's why the Merit System Protection Board was spun out. And that's why the Federal Labor Relations Authority came into being as a separate agency.
And you felt that was good at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of delegating, you know, and I can see the merits of that.
I still think it's good.
Right, I think it's
great.
Right. I mean, in terms of giving agencies their own role in hiring, because every agency is different. They know their own needs, and you can't have just one, you know, centralized body of people picking people for different agencies. Yeah.
So what we did was, that was actually, I went to work for OPM in 1978. It was a college intern.
Okay.
And so what we did was we decided, okay, you know, given that it's delegated, our role is oversight, okay? Well, what's happened as OPM has developed this very, very large fee-for-service business, which is in the Huffington Post article, which now their appropriations level is $200 million a year. Their fee-for-service business has grown to $1.7 billion a year.
And let me ask this question while you're going into that.
Mm-hmm.
Why, and, you know, because people hear OPM, because OPM is a federal agency,
mm-hmm.
why is there a fee-for-service program from an agency to charge another agency fees in order for them to do work?
It stemmed out of two things.
Okay.
They got Working Capital Fund Authority in the 80s. Because of BRAC, okay? And what they said was, because people are being riffed from government, every agency that's hiring needs to notify OPM of positions that they are opening so that information is accessible to individuals who have lost their job due to reduction of force.
Okay.
That morphed into the USA Jobs that you see today, and that morphed into the $600 or $700 million that OPM charges to have USA Jobs up and to do staffing services for agencies.
So that started out the whole process
and
of them having
this one thing.
It started
out as this very innocuous little piece of legislation that said, you know, what we want is for people to have access to jobs. Not jobs, but job information.
So I remember the 1-800 number, I mean, the hotlines that. That's where all that, you know, it's kind of central.
We used to have job information centers, one in every town.
Right, yeah.
You know, if you had a Social Security office, you had a federal job information center,
right.
Which I still think is probably the better idea. But so they did not intend for USA Jobs to become this monolithic, monopolistic site. Nor was it ever intended that OPM would go back into the hiring business and self-regulate. So now, if you're using OPM's products and using OPM services, they have oversight over themselves in the hiring process. And that was never intended. The second element was they did a lot of training services at the time. That spun out to a private company, which used to be called USDA Grad School. And now I think it's just called the Grad School.
Yeah, right, graduate school now.
Mm-hmm. And that became the second area in which they had a working capital fund, which was to provide training, largely training in human resources and almost nothing else. And so those were the two reasons why they built this up. Over time, it's just become so distorted. And my biggest concern about that is really fundamental. Because of that distraction and because 75% of OPM's workforce is based on these fees, the agency no longer does its core mission. It is very inadequate on oversight. One of the things that really spun me up enough to talk about this in terms of this article was I really got concerned about the fact when I started hearing all this noise about federal employees are overpaid. Now, that started to come out in USA Today, started to come out from the Cato Institute, started to come out from a variety of sources. And OPM's job is to make sure that federal employee pay is on par, not above and not below, but on par with the private sector. But OPM is a weak link here because they're not able to articulate that it is on par
mm-hmm.
because they've not not collected the data.
They're not doing the salary surveys anymore.
They're not doing a lot of things. And one of them is that. The second is they're not really negotiating. As the largest buyer of health services in the country, they're not negotiating really great health care benefits either.
Talking to Linda Ricks, she's the co-CEO of AVU Technologies Incorporated. They run AVUCentral.com. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. George on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Don't miss the first annual Backgammon Beating Cancer Tourney, Saturday, February 26th, to benefit the wellness community, providers of free programs of emotional support, education, and hope for people with cancer and their loved ones. Beginners to experts are welcome. For more information, call David Ogden at 301-717-7166. For more information about the wellness community of Greater Washington, call 301-493-5002. All programs at the wellness community are provided free of charge. Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award.
This week's Kaiser Permanente Experts in Health topic is eye health, featuring Dr. Cheryl Keyes, Chief of Ophthalmology for Northern Virginia for the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group.
Eye strain has become one of the leading office-related health complaints. Here are five steps you can take to reduce computer eye strain at work. Dim the lights. Excessively bright lighting can cause computer eye strain. Blink more often. Every 20 minutes, slowly blink 10 times. This helps re-wet your eyes, keep them comfortable, and your vision sharp. Relax your eyes and take frequent breaks. Every 30 minutes, look away from your computer and gaze at something far away. Adjust the top of your monitor so that the screen is slightly below eye level. You can then view it comfortably with your head and neck in a natural position. Get a computer eye exam. According to the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, computer users should have yearly eye exams. Ask your doctor about these and other tips to help you take care of your eyes. Be well and thrive.
To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's Experts in Health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Federal News Radio. This week, my special guest will be John Walcott, Chief Content Officer and Editor-in-Chief of Smart Brief. That's Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday, brought to you by the law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman. Visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Hispanics with arthritis. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus with HHS HealthBeat. The first deep look at how common arthritis is among Hispanics finds the disease affects the lives of millions. Researchers at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention analyzed national survey data. The report documented the toll that arthritis can take on lives. For instance, almost 1.4 million Hispanics said the disease limits their ability to be active, and about 1.2 million said they had severe pain. Researcher Louise Murphy says people can act to prevent or control arthritis.
If you're overweight or obese, losing weight can reduce your risk of getting osteoarthritis. If you already have arthritis, you can engage in low-impact exercise such as walking.
The study is in CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
For 11 years, government leaders have gathered to explore the latest mandates and best practices at the Government Performance Summit. Today, with a major revision to the Government Performance and Results Act, there is an unparalleled opportunity to integrate analytics into better decision-making for the entire nation. Join hosts the Performance Institute, FMA, AGA, and Gov events April 4th through the 6th for the 11th Annual Government Performance Summit. Space is limited, so register today at governmentperformance.org.
Connect with Federal News Radio wherever you are. Like us on Facebook to see the hottest news stories on your wall. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio. Download our free iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio. And now, connect to the radio station straight from your cell phone. Just call 712-432-6616. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for social media for details.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I have with me Linda Ricks. She's the co-CEO of AVU Technologies. They run AVUCentral.com. Linda, before we broke, and we were talking about kind of OPM. They're, you know, using these fee-for-services. Yep. They got into this whole hiring thing. When things got delegated out to other agencies to say, do your own hiring, they got into this whole dynamic of creating a centralized job base or
information center.
That's where USA Jobs kind of stem from,
right.
You know, where we kind of created this situation right here. You're saying that, hey, listen, that may be okay, but they could do it better. But you're saying that really OPM should be focused in on some other issues,
right?
Which are the health care, which are kind of retirement systems and everything else.
Right. And I think, you know, if you step back for a second and you look at the rate of health care costs for federal employees and federal retirees against the buying power that the government has, there's a mismatch there.
That 2 million people.
Yeah, we should be doing a better job on healthcare costs by virtue of that buying power. And you've got state exchanges starting to come up that can also be incorporated into that buying power. Those are things that OPM does not do any longer. They also don't just issue good policies any longer.
But why? I mean, because your article, you pointed out there's 2,000 something people, and I'm not nothing, you know, against OPM, but
You
know, as you're looking at it, why aren't they doing salary surveys? Why aren't they, you know, doing this analytical? Because OPM is supposed to be an analytical body.
Right. It's supposed to be a policy setting body.
Right.
And what I think the fundamental problem with that has been, as they have increased their fee for service business, they are so focused on making money and getting money from agencies that they have not done a good job of sticking with their core mission. They have almost, which is a shocking statistic, but I think it's 8% of the employees in the Office of Personnel Management are in the Human Resources series. Hmm. That's pretty low. And at the point at which that happens, you don't really have the knowledge and the expertise to be able to go and do these things that you should be doing as part of your core mission. So I kind of look at it this way. There's a lot of conflict of interest here, and there is almost no benefit being given to the federal workforce by having a body that is actually taking care of the needs of the federal workforce, which is what they exist to do. That was their original charter.
Now, let me play devil's advocate,
because
somebody will hear this and say, well, listen, okay, she runs a company that whose, you know, purpose is to get contracts in order to do hiring and everything else.
Yep.
And so her gripe is possibly that, you know, OPM has USA Jobs. And so that is a competition right there. What you're saying is what? I mean, you know, is that USA Jobs is not, you know, doing a good job, or they need, you know, are we having products that are not saving the government money and not hiring the right way?
Right. I think you have several problems.
Okay.
One is, and I recognize that people will see their, well, you know, what's her interest in this? And my interest is always, I am interested in business, and I am interested in having clients that are happy and business that's working for me. At the same time, we don't compete with USA Jobs because we consider USA Jobs a public information portal. We have AVU Central up. It is public information only. There is no revenue generated from that site. We charge no one anything. We don't advertise on the site. It's basically public notice. We did it to illustrate that a lot of organizations have an interest in learning about federal job opportunities and forwarding that information out of this centralized site to be more accessible to candidates.
You make your money is the assessment of people. Is the assessment when a person actually applies for a position, that's where you come in.
Right. And we do compete with OPM. OPM has a product that does a function around intake of applicants and assessment. The difference between us is basically this. I compete for my business. OPM does not. OPM gets their business non-competitively on interagency shared service agreements. The process of this intragovernmental fund transfer is the core of the problem, especially when you have oversight authority and you can shut an agency down and remove its hiring authority if they don't buy and use your product and you really, really want them to.
Okay.
So we have
so they're
no
getting,
such...
It's a monopoly scenario.
Exactly. Okay. And, it's kind of a... Think of it as a bully in the playground scenario, because you can throw your weight around a lot and take everybody's lunch money. And you know what? At the end of the day, they're left with nothing. The systems they have are pretty antiquated technology. They are not good at developing or good at deploying technology. And you don't have to believe me. You can just look at the GAO reports on it. So you have an organization that is not a technology player, doesn't understand how leverageable technology is, how leverageable social media is. I would like to see agencies go out on LinkedIn, create corporate sites for themselves, start recruiting using that means, and do it at no cost rather than paying millions of dollars to OPM to try to get the same function
right.
performed.
So you want to see more of the DEU, more of the delegating examining unit, where agencies are very much so, you know, putting out, like you said, doing on LinkedIn, going on Facebook, going on different sites, putting out different things at different venues that may be free.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these are now free sites or low-cost sites.
Right.
Right.
You know, and get on YouTube and, you know, do the things that you know, in theory, the administration is really for the use of social media and open, transparent government. But in OPM's USA Jobs is a direct contradiction to that. It has none of those capabilities or features. And instead of pushing the information out where the public can get access to it more freely, they close it in behind this front wall. And that's the part of the problem. It causes excessive costs in recruiting. And so the cost per hire for the government goes up. And right now we're looking for ways to save money.
And so the cost savings, because I think you had a number about close to $8,000 or so for bringing somebody in, right? I mean, is that right?
You get up above $5,000.
About $5,000. Yeah. So, I mean, the savings for an agency, if we kind of eliminated this fee for service thing from OPM and everything else, the savings could be pretty... substantial.
I would say the savings is in billions.
Wow. So, across the government.
Across the government. And it's one area that I think is important for this Congress to look at, because saving money there does not adversely impact program dollars. And it's redundant money. It's money that's being paid a couple of times over for the same function.
Right.
So by eliminating all of this sort of, I call it kind of a horizontal problem, Congress looks at a specific program, they look vertically down that program to look to save money. Well, rather than impact mission or program dollars, let's look horizontally. Where's all the duplication in government? Not the kind of duplication that OMB's looking at right now is, how many agencies do we have that deal with food safety? Well, you know, I think we went through that with DHS and the creation of DHS, so we know what that's like.
Sure.
But you know, look at these other issues. How many agencies whose core mission is something else, tries to deliver on a fee-for-service basis something, just to really sort of empire build that structure? That's what I think is where a lot of cost savings can be created, and I do think it's billions. I think it's right around $5 billion.
Do you think there should be an elimination of USA Jobs and just have other agencies kind of just, I mean, rather than having just a one centralized place and then have agencies kind of putting their own stuff out in different ways?
Yeah. I think the requirement, the regulatory requirement is not USA Jobs. The regulatory requirement is that there will be public notice of a job opportunity. That is the regulatory requirement. Only public notice. So if I put an ad in the paper, or if I put it up on Craigslist, or I put it in LinkedIn, or I put it in USA Jobs, it's all the same.
Linda Ricks, she's the co-CEO of AV Technologies. Mm-hmm. They run avcentral.com. Definitely get on there and use the resources they have. Linda, thank you so much for
thank
coming
you.
On the show.
It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.